Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, chapters 19 and 20, The Servant of Lord Voldemort, and The Dementor's Kiss. In these chapters, Scabbers is in fact Peter Pettigrew.
News to me.
And then a lot of action and drama happens.
A lot does happen. I've listened to these chapters this morning, so this will be, I'm going to reprogram my brain.
All fresh in your mind? Good. And joining us for this episode are two very special moms, the Book Moms, from the podcast The Book Life, Mo and Abby. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. I'm so excited to be here tonight.
Yeah.
Yes, so I was actually part of their podcast, The Book Life. You can get it on iTunes. Is there anywhere else? Like, can you get it at all the general podcast directories?
Yep, pretty much. We should be linked to everything at this point. And if we're not, we'll just keep relinking until we are.
So their podcast is not exclusively about Harry Potter. It's about a whole bunch of other, you know, young adult novels, fantasy, and otherwise. And so I actually was a guest for their specific episode for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I highly encourage everyone to go check that out. And anything else you would want to add, you know, Mo and Abby?
I have to say, this is my absolute favorite Harry Potter book, and I am so happy that we are talking about Prisoner of Azkaban tonight, because it is, like, it's number one in my life. Well, in my Harry Potter life, that is. So.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the books that I prefer in Harry Potter. So, yeah, I'm glad this is one we're talking about.
Yeah, I will admit, in the trilogy of the first three books, Prisoner of Azkaban is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. My favorite so far, because it deals with, as Amy has said, and I constantly remind everybody, Amy had a podcast, which I was co-host for a good while, called Sublimely Gothic, and this seems to have the most gothic elements in it. Keeps getting more and more gothic, which I totally love.
Yeah. And I just wanted to ask, you know, Mo and Abby, so, you know, I sent you the recording schedule of, you know, how when we were going to cover which chapters in Prisoner of Azkaban. Why did you choose these two chapters?
That is me. Abby's like, here, Mo, here's a list. Pick what you want. And I was like, oh, I would have picked the Quidditch match, but I don't think it was the Quidditch Final Cup. I don't think it was available. So I was like, you know what? These are some good action scenes, because, like, they're, like, heart pounding, like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And then, like, I remember reading I read this in sixth grade, and I remember going, well, I can't stop now. Keep on going until the end. And then I was like, oh, and now it's over, and I got to wait? Crap. Because Goblet of Fire was not out yet, so
it's... Well, I'm in the position where I read the two chapters, and then I have promised to Amy that I will stop reading. So sometimes I'm just like, maybe if I get that one sentence, but I don't do it. So I'm keeping myself very unspoiled. So I can relate to that feeling. It would be very easy to just, like, keep going through.
That's a lot of self-restraint, because at the end of chapter 20, you're kind of left on a cliffhanger.
Yes, definitely. There was another, again, I have not done it, so it has been an exercise. I'm proving to myself that I can do this as well.
You are doing a good job then, because I can't. I'd be like, why, yes, I did stop. Mm-hmm.
I can't fake it. So like, if I could, I would, but I'm too, it's the Hufflepuff in me. I can't tell a lie.
I understand. I'm a tomb in a Hufflepuff world. Yay. Yep.
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned this before. I like this exercise for the first time in my life. I'm slowing down and, you know, really digesting the chapters, you know, week by week rather than just blazing through them as I would typically do in any other rereading.
I feel like I can hang with like some hardcore Harry Potter fans now just because we do take the time to really dissect the chapter rather than speed through the books. Then I probably, you know, so often, I'm sorry, I'm squirming. I read for story and then it's done. But when we're kind of the way we're reading this, I appreciate. So all the Potterheads, I feel like I kind of know what I'm talking about a little bit better.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So let us dive into chapter 19. So, yeah. What was it? Oh, yeah. Snape shows up.
Yeah, he does.
Snape shows up, you know, under the invisibility cloak.
What a scoundrel. What a scoundrel. And he makes his kind of, I don't know, interaction here is, I was just kind of embarrassed for him. I wasn't like, I'm not Team Snape at all at this point in the series, but I was just kind of like, ugh. I mean, he had to be there to kind of get through the, tell more of the story, but it was uncomfortable. And I feel like Lupin calls him out a little bit on it too. So.
And so does Harry. Like, one of my notes here is that, you know, Sirius has a good reason for being immature and emotionally stunted. Snape doesn't. Again, Snape is a 33-year-old man at this point. And has not been in Azkaban surrounded by Dementors. Surrounded by annoying, pesky little children, but that's not the same thing.
No. I feel when I read this, so we talk about this thing called the drama triangle, where you're either the hero, the victim, or whatever the third one is. And I feel like he's played the victim so long that he's just shedding that identity, and he's like, I am going to be the hero. I am going to take Lupin and Sirius out, you know, look at me, and you guys fall behind, and they're like, no, you're an idiot. And he's like, no, look, they're the bad guys. I'm the good guy this time. And they're like, you're an idiot. And then just kind of, you're just like, kind of are. Like, you just need to stop, buddy.
Yeah. What was your thoughts on Snape's deranged downward spiral, Abby?
Oh my gosh. So I re-listened to these chapters today, and Snape throws off the cloak right at the beginning, and my first thought was, dang it, Harry, are you kidding me? Because I'm like, he forgot the stupid cloak. I forgot that he forgot the cloak. So I was just annoyed that Snape was there at all. Like, really? Come on.
You know, like, Harry could have... So Snape says he left it at the base of the Whomping Willow. What he should have done is just left it at the base of the entrance when the passageway ends and the Shrieking Shack starts. Well, that wouldn't have made a difference because Snape already knew exactly where they were because of the Marauder's map. Okay, never mind. My own theory is falling apart.
Well, I mean, if he had just kept it with him, then we wouldn't even be in this kerfunkle, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is one of your heirlooms from your family, from your dad, and you just left this priceless piece of your history just on the ground, whatever. He's such a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah. He wanted to save his friend.
Well, it reminds me of, like, how he and Hermione left it when they got rid of Norbert, and they accidentally dropped it and it was found. Like, come on, Harry, you have to keep better track of your stuff. You don't have that much stuff.
That's true. That's very true.
It would be nice if the invisibility cloak would be invisible, so then you won't find it. But it's not, apparently.
I had to remind myself of that as you all were talking. I was like, but it's invisible. And then I was like, not when it's like not on somebody. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Rereading this was just very much, oh my god, Snape is so deranged. And again, like, he's this so triumphant. It's like, oh, I get to be the hero. And one of my biggest notes was, you know, that Snape is, you know, saying, like, we don't even have to go, you know, as far as the castle. We can just call the Dementors, like, on the grounds. And it's like, does Snape have the authority to do that? I don't think he does. I think that, you know, in my headcanon, because, you know, Dumbledore is such a stickler and really doesn't like that the Dementors are here, I think he would be the only person that has the ability or the legal or, you know, administrative ability to summon a Dementor onto the grounds, because, you know, he's like, I don't care what the staff's personal opinions are on the Dementors, only I can say whether they're going to come in or not. So honestly, I think Snape was fully prepared to break the rules and, like, basically, you know, beg forgiveness, then ask permission from Dumbledore, because then it's done. And then I'll say it's not my fault, like, the Dementors were ordered, you know, have been given the order from the Ministry to perform the Dementor's Kiss. So I thought about that in more detail in a way I never had before.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting, considering that he's played the victim for so long, and now he's trying to play the hero all of a sudden, it's like the power rush went to his head. Because he's not thinking logically, he's not listening to anyone else, and yes, you have this petty grudge that you've held on to for 20 plus years now, but sir, you're about to kill two people. Literally. Like, that's more than a petty grudge. That's, you are going to become a murderer. Like,
I will say, honestly, do you ever feel like in the Wizarding world, murder seems to be not that big of a deal? Like, I feel like they throw away people's lives a lot.
I think it was really interesting, and we're not here yet, but how, like, the 13-year-old boy was like, look, guys, let's take a minute. You know, when it, like, really comes down to it. When it comes down to it, he's the one who's like, let's take a beat. So I just thought that, because we have all these adults, all these, like, people that are whatever, and then the kids, like, pump the brakes. But And again, I feel like I always have to explain. I'm not sure what's coming down the road with Harry and Snape. And I've talked time and time again. I know Snape is important and there's more to this relationship, but I don't know it yet. So I'm just so confused about, he's like wanting to save Harry, but then he hates Harry. I'm like, what the hell's your deal here? Like, why is he, you know, he's like, oh, I got to save this kid. It's, I guess right now, we're going on that it's his hero complex and he can kind of put like a feather in his cap and be cool, awesome Snape the hero for once in his life instead of Snape the put upon whatever.
Well, yeah, you have to think, like, Snape is thinking, I'll save the boy who lived. Like, mm-hmm. What kind of clout is that?
Yeah.
And then he'll get what? An Order of the Merlin? I don't remember what other awards. That's the only one I can think of. Like, I know Dumbledore has that one, but I can't remember what else he would get.
Yeah, it's... And I think what especially gets me irritated is, you know, Harry poses the logical question of, like, you know, Remus Lupin has had plenty of time alone with me, giving me Patronus lessons. Why wouldn't he harm me then? And he's just, and again, he's so not in logic mode at this point, because he's like, do not, you know, I do not presume to know how a werewolf's mind thinks. And then I'm just like, no. You're smart. Snape, you're smarter than this.
He gave everybody a freaking assignment to be like, you guys got to know all about werewolves. And it's, that threw me a little bit.
For as smart as Snape is, sometimes I'm like, oh boy, you dumb. Like, you gotta stop and then think for a hot second. Like, academically, yeah, he excels. Like, everything else, though. I'm like,
I didn't think of it this, you know, an unfortunate reality. My husband and I, as, you know, my husband's PhD candidate, you know, hoping to get a career in academia, and I, by day, I'm a university administrator, just realizing that, you know, you would think that people in academia would have a certain degree of, like, emotional intelligence, but some just don't. They are exactly like Snape, where academically and intellectually it's like, phew, and then, but emotionally, they're like 5-year-olds or 10-year-olds at best.
This goes back to, like, it makes me think a little bit, if he was a muggle and lived in the muggle world, would he be diagnosed with, you know, be on the autistic spectrum? Mm-hmm. And then would he get the therapy he needed to help regulate his emotions and be able to navigate? Like, I feel like this is when therapy is good for you. And we need wizarding therapy. I would enjoy exploring that concept.
Mm-hmm. I like the level of compassion you have brought to Snape, because I'm just seeing him as so one-dimensional. I haven't been like, he probably needs some help. Like, I like that. Because that's, I haven't gotten there yet. So that's
I'm going to tell you, I have read this book like 10 or 12 times.
Okay.
It takes a hot second to get to a level of compassion because I don't like Snape either. I am not a Snape fangirl. Like, I'm a Hermione fangirl, and that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
So let's see. So ultimately, Harry decides, you know, well, they separately decide, Harry and Sirius, to knock out Snape. Because, again, Snape's not helping the situation in any way, shape, or form. And especially, because even with, like, okay, even if we accept the premise that, you know, Snape thinks he's doing the right thing with, you know, Sirius, he has no jurisdiction whatsoever to put Remus Lupin in harm's way, regardless of how he thinks he was an accomplice. That's not for him to judge or decide.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Snape gets knocked out, conveniently gets knocked out, so Snape does not get to witness the big reveal of Peter Pettigrew. Jess, what did you think of this?
I have expressed that I thought this might be like a red herring, maybe, like the, maybe not. And then it's for real, like the Weasleys have been living with a man as a transformed as a rat. Like, that's so creepy and weird. And but then, you know, they explain the logic behind it. You know, they're like, how do you think this rat's so old? And I was like, now I feel like an idiot. You know, like, I feel like it was very, it was surprising, but I enjoyed this reveal a lot. Peter Pettigrew seems kind of like not a cool guy. Obviously, we learn he's not a cool guy, but interesting, and I'm sure he has a very interesting perspective on life at the Weasley house. So,
I would say, like, right before that, on page 362, one of my favorite Hermione moments is right there, because she's like, we attacked a teacher. Guys, we attacked a freaking teacher. And I can just imagine her, like, hyperventilating, like, having a hot second, and then suddenly we go into a giant reveal, and she's like, what is going on now? We just knocked out a teacher. You've been living with a man. I cannot handle this, guys. Yeah, and that's when she's done with the boys. Anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, oh, we just attacked a teacher. I don't think that's really coming from her, like, sycophantic teacher's pet way. I think she's just, because, again, she dislikes Snape just as much as, you know, the boys do, even though she's better at, you know, dealing with it. But yeah, I think it's more like, oh crap, what are going to be the ramifications of this? Especially Snape, and Snape is going to definitely make us pay when he wakes up.
Right. I thought about that as well. Snape is not one to forget or forgive very easily. Obviously, he's had this grudge that is has carried him to do some interesting things lately.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we get the whole explanation of Sirius figured out that Scabbers was Peter because of the newspaper clipping of his family, of the Weasley family in Egypt. What'd you think of that, Jess?
That
little tiny detail. It's like, oh, they went to Egypt. Isn't that nice?
That is the stuff that, like, just gets me so razzed. And, like, anytime I read, you know, or a movie or something, like, I just, that made me giddy, that little bit of information. I don't know. That's why I think I love reading our reveals like that. Not the big reveals, but the tiny little bits of information that later on you're like, so now, you know, when I do my first reread or whatever, I can kind of like know that and piece these together. That's what makes it fun. So I thought that was great. As always, a little irritated that I didn't pick up on that, but like, why would I without knowing. So I'm not a very good mystery reader. Like I said, I usually kind of keep reading for story instead of clues. So I love that. I thought that was great. I also love the Crookshank story that kind of plays out, because I've always been a little bit of a team Crookshanks anyway, because I'm always usually team kitty cat. So I don't know. I loved that too.
And yeah, and so now you know that, you know, Sirius wasn't really all that inventive in how he escaped Azkaban. He literally just slipped through the bars.
Which this made me think about when the last time we talked about the movie portrayal, which I think I've seen one or two stills of Sirius and how he was portrayed in the movie. I haven't watched the movie because I'm not going to spoil anything for myself. And then Amy's description of what she thinks Sirius would have looked like. And it made me go, Amy is 100% right. Like, the movie got it wrong. It would have been like this wolfhound, very kind of famished, tall, skinny, you know, dog.
Did the movie do a Newfoundland instead? Or just a large black dog?
It just looked like a big black dog.
Yeah, I never was able to gouge the breed they specifically went with for Sirius.
I only asked because, I mean, we have a Newfoundland, so I'm like, huh. I'm like, no, I don't. I have never imagined Sirius Black as the kind of dog I have. I completely agree. A wolfhound, so much more accurate. Even the way he's described in the book with his claw-like hands and his gaunt figure. Like, I didn't want Gary Oldman to be, like, completely emancipated when he played the character, but also was like, well, buddy, you have too much fat still. Like, gotta be a little skinnier here.
Like, but he already played Dracula, like.
Right. Come on, man.
Yep. So, let's see. Where else were we? So, yeah, big reveal. Well, Jess, what do you think of Peter Pettigrew as a character, what he did, his reasonings for it, and...
So, if I'm understanding correctly, because I kind of tried to re-listen to this, because he just kind of... I mean, a rat, obviously, is the most appropriate kind of a stereotype of a rat. Now, I know people have pet rats, and they're very smart, but, like, we think about... When I think about a rat, this is a very good, applicable... like, characterization. He's kind of sniveling in the corner, you know, like, just kind of slimy and maybe a little spineless. So the action that he took, which is kind of aligning himself with the most powerful entity in the room or whatever, is really gross. And nobody, I don't like that in people. I think of experience that with people. It's just like, what are they? There are a hundred different terms for that. But all of this was skeezy. Like, his whole little plan and whatnot was just so slimy. And I understand Sirius's frustration and kind of how it lit the fire and how he was like, this guy, you know, screwed me over for years and now I'm out to get him.
Yeah, I kind of thought about it. I just thought about, you know, I just took it. Yeah, he's a scum bucket. But I was starting to think, like, is there any way we could, like, recontextualize this? Like, was he blackmailed? Was there something else going on that they were lording over him? But it really just sounds as if, like, he had personally made the decision that Voldemort was more than likely going to win and was just hedging his bets and getting in early.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like he wanted more power because he's always been on the tail end of the whole party. Like, he's not a powerful, like, in this, like, when he comes out, you're like, you don't feel like he's a powerful wizard. You're like, so you've been a rat for the last how many years again? And, you know, versus, like, I can't imagine if this was reversed and we had Sirius instead of him just being meek and quiet and staying that whole way because he feels like a more powerful person. I'm not sure about Lupin. I feel Lupin's a little bit more chill than Sirius. But it's like, you know, he's always never been one of them. Like, he's been one of them, but not quite one of them. And he's like, well, I'm going to go take this power. I can do this. And they trust me. And I'm going to just be like, trade my friendship for some power. Perfect.
Yeah, like, yeah, of course, I hone in on that a lot, and the fact that, you know, he clearly has so much insecurity in trying to, you know, attach himself, and Sirius literally says it, like, you were gonna make sure that Voldemort was the biggest bully on the playground before you, you know, invested in him like the way you invested and, you know, attaching yourselves to us at school. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Not cool.
Not an admirable guy. And I was thinking about, you know, kind of strengths and weaknesses and things like that. And if there was an opportunity, I mean, obviously he made his decision to kind of align himself with the dark side, but, you know, he didn't have to feel that way. He could have used his rat powers for good. I don't know. He could have, you know, he can, that's the thing that I was like, you can get into places, you can do all these things, but I mean, he was just a little bit of a chicken, but he's a rat, whatever. But he's pretty kind of, he's pretty savvy. I mean, he made like this whole thing look like Crookshanks killed him and then he did all this stuff. So it's like, you're smart. You're just applying it wrong. Like that's the thing. It's like, come on, man, do it. Yeah, do better.
It's like McGonagall's like cat form, like for the Ministry of Magic. And again, the way he can make things appear in certain ways and clearly has some magical power. Otherwise he wouldn't have been able to blow up the street.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Like, so I think people forget that. So yeah. So like he could have been, again, rats can get into places. There would have been something for him at the Ministry of Magic, whether in the department of like red, you know, controlling magical catastrophes or like, you know, a number of professions.
Right. Something better instead of like cutting off your finger and throwing Sirius under the bus. And I don't know. And I don't know. Not a cool guy.
Your thoughts, Abby?
Yeah, I mean, somebody that Weasley from the start would have just... It always made me wonder why they were friends with him. Mm-hmm. Like, how did he ingratiate himself into this group? Did he just, like, suck up to James because James was a rather cocky jerk? Like, I don't know.
Either a kiss up or, you know, I kind of sort of think that maybe there was just a really random situation that happened where, again, I think probably maybe Peter like displayed some skill or whatever, whether it was as dramatic as when Hermione came into the friend group with the troll. I doubt that, but you know, I think there would be some instance that maybe it's like the guys would say, okay, deep down there is something with this guy, but that it didn't, you know, fully actualize itself in any meaningful way to withstand the temptation of the dark side.
The temptation of Voldy. Yeah.
And I love Ron's like indignation. I let you sleep in my bed.
I love that too.
Oh, I can't imagine being a 13-year-old boy and knowing, even though he was a rat, but you were sleeping with the man as white. It's like an older man. It's like one of those like most like cringe things where he's like, how do I cleanse myself from this? Like, this is so awful.
I just feel so bad for Ron when this comes up. It's like, oh man, no.
You know, and the sad thing is, I think of Ron, you know, whisper, you know, he having his drawings curtained and, you know, whispering to Scabbers like, oh, everyone was paying attention to Harry and not me. And like having all these like deep conversations, like with his pet rat. And it's like, ugh.
I looked at my cat a little differently after I read that. I was like, what if all along, because, you know, like she sleeps by me, whatever. I was like, and that makes me think of American Gods by Neil Gaiman. I think there's a situation like that in that book. It's not young adult literature friendly situation, but I did look at my cat and I thought, I don't think she, hopefully she wouldn't be doing some Peter Pettigrew style things, but anyway.
Yeah. So what I was struck by, again, like Mo, you mentioned that, you know, they're just all ready to kill, you know, Peter Pettigrew. And Sirius, you can understand why, but I'm kind of surprised that, you know, they show, Harry the writer is showing Lupin as being like the most calm and rational and in control of this situation. And, you know, the fact, again, not that we know Lupin, you know, extremely well at this point, but just on offhand, you would think that Lupin would be the type that, again, it's not our place to, you know, be the vigilante, you know, Avengers. He has to, you know, go through the process with a trial and everything. And the fact that, you know, maybe this, or yeah, I guess if Remus is the type where it's like, yeah, like this guy helped to murder like the few people who accepted me as a werewolf, I want to kill him. I guess I would have just expected a little bit more emotion and anger out of Remus if that was what he was feeling.
I feel like in this part, you have to keep in mind that Sirius is a more dominant personality than Lupin is. And so in their friend group, he would have been one of the leaders, whereas Lupin would have been more one of the followers. Now, he might have been a voice of reason, but at the same time, he still went along with pretty much everything they did.
True, and so, it's hard to break that, even
now. Yeah, I wonder if, even after all those years of just, like, not seeing each other, it was a matter of, that was just his automatic response. Like, Sirius has decided we're going to do this thing, so we're going to do this thing. And that's kind of what I wonder.
Oh, but that's good, because and they're even in the Shrieking Shack, surrounded by the environment of their boyhood shenanigans.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I like that. That helps me put it into perspective, because, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, when you get back with those people from your childhood, you just regress into those childhood roles. Because, yeah, it was definitely, you know, James Potter and Sirius Black, and then it was Remus Lupin, and then it was Peter Pettigrew.
Mm-hmm. And see, if they'd been reunited for, like, several months or a couple years or something at this point, I would expect Lupin to show a little bit more of what you might expect from Lupin.
Mm-hmm.
Just because at that point, they would have reconnected, the immediate regression would have worn off, and he would have been back to his current adult self. So, yeah.
Interesting. I like it.
As I said, I'm not sure if I agree with you, Abby. I'm more in the aspect of Lupin just had this huge shock of knowing that Sirius, that the Secret Keeper was Peter and not Sirius, versus he thought Sirius was the one who did the betrayal, you know, versus, like, I think he felt like he could stand with Peter until everything's revealed. Then he was like, you're the one that betrayed our best friend. And, like, that just snapped. He had just had a purely emotional response that he was not rationally thinking at all. So I'm not sure if he was following as more as just feeling through all that anger washing through him. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to kill you because you killed my friend. Yeah, perfect response for...
I think it could be both, that he had the shock and old school Sirius is like, okay, we're going to kill him. And he's like, yep, that's the easy thing. And that's what I want to do emotionally in this moment.
Yeah, I think that's probably more of the answer. I think
both of those are really interesting perspectives, because if you apply them to just like how easy it is to just kind of reflecting back on friend groups in high school or college or whatever, how, you know, you have kind of the leaders and then you kind of have the however falls in line. And I like both. I think the kind of knee jerk, like this is what we have to do, the emotional response is kind of what I felt initially. But I like your... This is why it's so great to talk about these things and kind of get all these different perspectives. I love it.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, Harry intervenes and decides that, you know, I don't think, you know, as crappy and as spineless and cowardly as Wormtail is, I don't think my dad would want you guys to, like, kill him like this.
Love that he played the dad card in this situation. Like, y'all remember who I am, who my father was. You know, fall in line. And again, I just love that, you know, I think so often or at least I kind of assume like the adults are going to be the cooler heads. And I guess it's more personal for them. You know, that's why there might be a lack of hesitation. But I also thought it was a little more diabolical on Harry's part, because he's like, let the Dementors have him. And from what we know about the Dementors, that's no cakewalk. You know, I kind of expected Peter Pettigrew to be like, just kill me. Like, it's fine. I don't want to deal with these Dementors. But so I don't know.
Yeah, well, it goes back to the old philosophy of death is too easy.
Yeah,
and too quick or whatever.
Exactly.
I thought, since from the perspective of this is Harry's memoir, and the fact that the kids had the level heads and the adults don't, I'm like, did you embellish on your story as you're retelling, showing that you are the calm and level-headed versus can't trust adults, guys, it was me, you know, appealing to Harry's ego a little bit. Mm. He's like, I'm the one who saved Peter from the crazy adults. And I'm like,
that's something we haven't explored, Jess, in this theme of Harry as an unreliable narrator.
Now I'm going to be looking at everything a little differently. I know I feel like some of Harry's prejudices come through, and I forgot there was a very specific example I had a few weeks ago that I was like, all right, man, we get it. But the unreliable narrator, oh my gosh.
Actually, that makes so much more sense, because throughout these books, it very much feels like Harry is oblivious to a lot of things. And so it makes me wonder if the way he wrote it is just he was so focused on himself that he didn't bother with any of the other stuff, rather than he was actually that oblivious.
Yeah.
And so how does... So we end chapter 19, where, again, they agree not to kill Peter Pettigrew and decide to march everyone out into the tunnel. And thus immediately transitioning to chapter 20, The Dementor's Kiss, which is actually quite short. I forgot how short it was.
Very short.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Wow, so, yeah, it is really short.
Yeah, so Jess, what did you think of the beginning, the little conversation between Sirius and Harry?
I loved how immediately Harry trusted him. Because I feel like I would be a little more hesitant than Harry. I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm supposed to be scared of you. But then I also love the 13-year-old boy and probably deep down 13-year-old girl me. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to show the Dursleys. I'm going to go live with this murderer. It's going to be awesome. Like, screw you guys. So And then my soft heart was very excited that Harry doesn't have to spend another frickin' moment with the Dursleys if he doesn't want to, because I really, really don't like them. I don't think they were written to be likable, or, you know, and Harry definitely doesn't remember them fondly. But so I was very excited. And then I was just like, okay, Sirius, let's just make it through the rest of this so Harry doesn't have to go back to the Dursleys. So I liked that reveal. I thought it was, I enjoyed that very much.
Mm-hmm. And then let's see, and not too long after that, well, I love the personal of, like, Ron had taken to, like, Scabbers' reveal as a personal insult.
Of course he did. I feel like that's like, yeah, of course, Ron, you took it.
He's still in shock about sharing a bed with a grown man for that long. Like, you can't blame him. I'd take that pretty personally, too.
We got another whole host of accusations against Peter Pettigrew now. That now I just kind of had a moment to think about that. I was like, oh, no. But...
Yep. And then, but every, their little train of, you know, attached, Ron and Lupin are attached to Peter Pettigrew in shackles, and Sirius is, you know, leading a hovering, unconscious Snape. But what happens? Lupin begins to transform. What'd you think of this, Jess?
I thought it was badass. I love a werewolf. I was excited. You know, to be quite honest, I should have assumed that the werewolf reveal was going to come. And I love, like, universal monsters. I'm a big monster, gothic kind of person, Dracula, Frankenstein. So the fact that there was a werewolf, like, scene in here made me very excited. I was psyched. I didn't think that, I wasn't really sure if that would happen because, you know, I thought he had it under control for so long. But there was a little bit of a slip, as we learned. Go ahead, sorry.
No, finish.
And just Lupin, like we talked about, has had such a cool head for the whole time. You know, he seems like I would want to be Professor Lupin's, like, favorite student, just because I like his demeanor through this whole story. So then to see kind of just the total opposite of that just come out is pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah. No, it's just because, thinking back on it, the Wolfsbane potion that Snape brews for him, it's not a question of, oh, I can just drink this once the night before and I'm okay. Like, this is something that Lupin has to drink, like, at least like daily for like the week leading up to the full moon. So it is a process. Like, so yeah, like clearly just missing one dose, you know, was, and the thing is, you know, Lupin was going to transform, you know, regardless, but now he doesn't have his mind. And then it's like, oh crap, we have a full-fledged savage werewolf. Yeah, what would Abby and Mo, what were your thoughts revisiting Werewolf Showdown and Dementor Showdown again?
I don't know. It frustrates me that he turns into a werewolf just because he was having to rely on Snape, of all people, for this potion. Somebody who hates him. And then the fact that the whole reason he didn't drink it was because he saw what was happening and ran to help. Like, he was trying to be such a good friend and such a good teacher, and like, it backfired so bad. And I've always hated that Snape was the only one who could make the potion for him. Like, I understand, academically, Snape is brilliant, but it still makes me mad that he was the only one who could brew the potion for him. Because, yeah. Like, what was he doing prior to this? Was he just going crazy every full moon? Because if that's the case, wouldn't you want to employ werewolves in a place where they could get the potion and actually, like, live semi-normal lives?
Why does Snape make the potion for him? Because is it, like, a passive-aggressive thing? Like, he's like, kind of. He assigns that assignment. Anyway, sorry.
It's because it's a really difficult potion, and so not everybody can just brew it on a whim kind of thing. It takes somebody with, like, genuine skill and intelligence to do it.
So he's, like, flexing. Like, I can do this. So, like, okay.
Yeah, and I'm the only one around that can do it because I have my mastery in potions. And I think it's both the potion brewing itself is very difficult, and Lupin is not in a position to do that himself. But I think also from various Harry Potter trivia, it's quite expensive, the ingredients. And again, a lot of times in Lupin describing himself, he's never been able to stay work because of prejudices towards werewolves. Right. So he never, even if he could brew it himself, he wouldn't have the financial means to consistently get the ingredients.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I'll say, when I came back to this, I'm pretty sure this was my first experience reading about werewolves.
Oh.
When I read this book. Because I was like, let's see, if I read this in sixth grade, I'm like, I have not experienced werewolves by this point. Because I read all of the Mercedes Lackey Heralds of Voldemort series that were out, which do not have werewolves. It's just high fantasy and magic. So I was like, this was my first werewolf I have met, apparently, in a fantasy novel. And then, Abby, you brought up a really interesting point. Like, I was thinking about, you know, why would the Wizarding World not give this out to everyone? And then it would just make too much sense. You just are too logical. Like, you know?
Because, this is a more ominous, insidious interpretation, but, you know, they want to say they're dangerous, but at the same time, they don't want werewolves to be able to reintegrate into society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they just
want to... Well, the sad thing is, like, werewolves without the potion are mindless killers. So, rather than trying to hunt them down and kill them, why would you not try to help them? Because 95% of their lives, they are human. Like, it's so inhumane. It's horrifying.
Yeah. It's just really sad. And it goes back to, Abby, because we've talked about this too. Oh, I can't remember in book two, like, Dobby can't use a wand or anything because it's against magical law to give any non-human a wand. And it's like, but think, like, because they talk about there's hags and Hogsmeade. Pretty sure they mention, like, there's a banshee that's visited. You have the Vila, which is another race. I can't remember, other humanoid races. But they're not allowed to have wands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's a lot of barriers to entry that the Wizarding World gives to anyone that's not, at least a human and a wizard.
Yeah. And I think because werewolves are in that very, position of exactly being in the in-between for the majority of the time, at least for wizards who turn into werewolves, they have wands. And, they are this group that are, super powerful. you know, at a certain time, you know, of the lunar cycle, and they have wands, and goes along of, for whatever reason, they, you know, Wizarding Society has decided that it's better to keep the pecking hierarchy as it is. Just like real life.
Yeah, I'm like, and we're getting into real life events. Here we go.
Yes, yeah.
I was just having a long venting conversation where all I just ended the text message chat with, eat the rich!
don't disagree. Yeah.
So in the chaos of Lupin transforming, we get Peter Pettigrew decides to escape. Did that bum you out, Jess?
I mean, what I guess, like, I should have expected it, but I was kind of like, I guess in the kind of chaos, I was like, well, of course this is going to happen because it's an easy getaway a little bit. But I'm sure he'll show up again in a meaningful way. If he's completely gone, I don't know, but I know he's, yeah, it was, that was, this whole situation was very messy. So.
So, and then, of course, because having just a werewolf is not bad enough, then the Dementors start swarming on them.
I remember reading this as a kid and just being terrified. Like, this is one of the scariest scenes to read when you are 12.
Really?
Oh, man. Like, they're in the forest and it's dark and you're being attacked by giant black monsters? Yes. Hard pass. I remember thinking, glad I'm not him.
Yeah, did you lose sleep? Or, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just wondering.
I don't think so. Okay. I'm not, like, I would say I have a pretty active imagination when I sleep, but I'm a good sleeper. And nothing's going to keep me from my sleep, let me tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, so far there's only one book to date that has given me nightmares, and that is The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova. Not reimagining, I should say, but a new twist on Dracula. Highly recommended. But yeah, no, I don't know why it was specifically about being close to the lake. I don't know why. And all the, I just had in my note, this is the stuff of nightmares.
Yes, yes it is. It's complete stuff of nightmares.
And I forgot that Harry sees the face that the Dementor, I forgot that that happens.
That's the stuff of nightmares.
Yes, like right, like all through this, and you're just like, he's dead, we're done. The end of the book is written by somebody else, apparently. Like
that, I was like, do we ever see its face? So I was really psyched when this happened, because I was like, oh, cool. I kind of know what it looks like. Granted, it's hideous. At least I know. Pretty scary.
Yeah, so, yeah, if George R.R. Martin was writing this book, yeah, Harry would have just died and we would have picking up with someone else.
And then the rest of it went Hermione or something like that. Oh,
perfect.
I just want to say, like, I really like how this was described, especially a gaping shapeless hole sucking the air with the sound of a death rattle, because I love that. I feel like I could hear it in my... And so that just amps up the creepy, and I was very into that little bit of information.
Mm-hmm. So, Jess, what did you think of the very ending? What came to rescue him?
Now I'm going to have to okay. I knew that this is his Patronus, right? This is the Patronus. Okay. I don't know how. Oh, it's probably because the cover of my book is like... It's right there.
Oh.
So
I was like, mine's old. Well, so this is my husband's because all of mine got cat vomited on and I couldn't rescue them, which was really sad. But luckily my husband has his own set.
Oh my God. At least your cat is not as sacrilegious as mine. My cat ended up peeing on my Quran.
Whoa.
What did you do to make your cat so mad at you?
I don't know, but Prophet Muhammad was nice to kitties.
Apparently, your cat did not agree.
Okay.
My kitty barfed on my copy of A Discovery of Witches. So, you know, they I don't know why. They like to pick on that.
Yeah,
I'm suddenly liking my cats a whole lot more now.
Yeah, you should. I mean, Abby, I lost books 2 through 7, and mind you, 4 of those were first edition books.
Oh man!
No, which cat was it?
It was Sabriel.
Oh,
when she was really sick.
Oh,
and yeah. I was like, "Sweet, I can't be mad at you," but
right. Yeah, whether it was cat vomit or cat urine, that's the only time I actually burned books, because I didn't want to throw them in the trash and have someone be like, oh, who threw away books, and have them touch it without knowing what was it really was. So, yeah.
Oh, smell.
And as we're all cat moms, we're all having moments of, oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, my cat's destroyed one of our couches by peeing all over it, because he had a UTI, but he has never destroyed a book, so...
I just blamed myself. I'm like, what was I doing? So now I bought bookshelves, they're not on the floor anymore. I was like, oh man, I did this to myself. But
the Patronus, Jess.
I love a cat conversation. I don't know, and again, maybe I just forgot, that we ever learned what James Patronus was, or James, like his what he morphed into. They didn't say,
We haven't technically figured it out, no.
Okay, so I think I figured it out a little bit, because it's, what was that chapter called? Prongs. So it's like put 2 and 2 together, which is pretty sweet. And
which makes you smarter than some podcasters. So there's one very famous Harry Potter podcast, Unspoiled Harry Potter, and the unspoiled person was trying to figure out what prongs could be, and she's like, a lobster! and that became an ongoing like joke that even sometimes is brought up when I listen to their Game of Thrones podcast. It's like, you know, iconic in their inside jokes funny. History.
That's well, I figured it wasn't the lobster, and the book wasn't the only giveaway. I know. I feel like Harry's Patronus being a deer is very like a pop culture knowledge, but and then I just thought, kind of reading through this, when I saw prongs, I was like, that's a pretty cool little romantic kind of thing. Romantic and, you know, not the one con the first thought context, but.
In the grandeur, capital R romantic way.
Yes, thank you for saving me there. I mean, you usually do. So, but yeah, that was awesome. And then then he's out. And that's the end of the chapter.
And then it goes on to Hermione.
Yes, yeah.
Hermione survived, but Harry didn't. It's okay.
The next chapter is Hermione's secret, so... There we go.
Yep, that's so, why. That's what happens.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on the end of the chapter, Abby and Mo? Mm.
One thing These are I good chapters to cover. There's a lot to talk about.
I'll say one thing I have to say. Since I've seen the movies, I have such a hard time now picturing the scene anymore. That's not the movie scene. Hmm. And sometimes that is, I feel... such a disservice to myself, because I'm like, my imagination is very good, but now all I am flooded is with, you know, Daniel Radcliffe, and I'm like, going back and reading this, and I just recently listened to it too, and I was like, yep, nope, still interposing all of the characters over these characters, but it's such a great scene. Like, I love this chapter.
Yeah, I like to, there are some characters, that, again, that are iconic, that where the movie stuff, you know, influences it so much, like, but it does, I like to do a combination of them sometimes, like, in my imagination, I think of McGonagall being very much like Maggie Smith.
Oh, Maggie Smith, yes.
But just mm-hmm. being younger and having the black hair, but otherwise being very much in every way, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, and thus concludes chapter 20. Yes, and just 2 more chapters left, Jess.
Crazy. Crazy. This is book 4, or 3. Oh, yep. God, I don't know. Yeah. That's great. We've been on the Harry Potter journey for a long time, and we will continue. So that's great.
Okay. And now we can move on to Gothic Geek Out. So, Jess, what were your gothic thoughts?
I am not going to say the Shrieking Shack again. because that would have been the third time I used the shrieking shack. But I think just the conversations that happened between the three adults with all the secrets revealed, I feel like that's a very gothic theme, where you have kind of the past is inserting itself and these people who you think are one thing are not the thing. Now, in gothic literature, it's not usually a rat that's actually a man, but, you know, it's
like your lover is your sibling.
Your lover is your sibling, or the ghost upstairs is actually, you know, your wife, or, you know, just a number of those types of things. So I thought that was very the gothic moment for me there. The fact that it took place in this shrieking shack was pretty cool, because I'm totally into the shrieking shack and the gothic symbolism around it. But that was mine. What was yours, Missy?
Mine was Remus's transformation.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Just because, again, one of the classic gothic horror monsters. And, you know, of all of our tenure on Sublimely Gothic, you know, we did, you know, vampires, Frankensteins, like, we did not do any, like, there isn't a staple, like, classical werewolf novel. If there are, they're very obscure. Like, they have not reached, like, Dracula status.
I can't think of a single one. I mean, the universal monsters, you know, that's the werewolf mm-hmm. that I think of. The coolest werewolf transformation was in a Netflix show that I saw that's name escapes me. One of the Sarah's guards.
Was it Hemlock Grove?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. That is a cool werewolf transformation and a cool vampire scene. It's a little crude, but.
And whatever. A good show. It's a good show.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's good gothic-y. But no, we never did. We never had a werewolf show up in our.
Yep. So that was mine. Now, again, I don't have anything super deep. Just, yeah, werewolf showed up.
Awesome.
Alrighty then. And now we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And the tarot card that I pulled out was the Queen of Cups. So let's see. Let me pull up a little description. Let's see. My cats are starting World War III outside my bedroom.
It's okay. I can hear my children are getting, like, slap happy. I'm, like, hearing, like, this banging upstairs, some screeching, and I'm like, interesting.
I told my husband. Mine are finally asleep. They, like, my older one burst in. That's what you were seeing earlier.
Okay. Yeah. So, the Queen of Cups is a beautiful, introspective woman who sits on a throne at the edge of the sea. In her hand, she holds... Okay. The Queen of Cups is nurturing, caring, compassionate, and sensitive. When you see her in a tarot reading, you are embodying her nurturing mother energy. You support others by listening with your heart, being compassionate, and caring for them deeply. You are empathetic and can sense the need of others by tuning into your intuition, and you hold the space for others to express their emotion and be in the truest, most authentic versions of themselves. You have mastered this in such a way that even though you hold space for emotional expression, you don't take on other people's energy or emotional issues because you are well-grounded and know when to create a healthy separation. So, what I think of when I hear this is I think of Harry trusting his intuition to take out Snape because Snape was being a problem.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought of Harry... stopping them from killing Peter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he, you know, of course, it's a difference. Like, Harry, of course, is the son of the guy who was murdered, but at the same time, Harry didn't know his parents, whereas these two adults, like, knew him and, you know, had a very, you know, whole history and childhood and, you know, again, had their emotions raging in a way that Harry just doesn't, because his sort of sense of vengeance and anger is, you know, more, not to diminish it, but it's just more abstract.
Right. Yeah.
So I pulled up also another on my other, I'm on my setup, so I have like three screens going on, and it says, because you read the, I guess, upright version, but the reverse version too is talking about inner feelings, self-care, self-love, and codependency for another shadow meaning of it too. And I was like, ooh, like I'm seeing like all about Peter for this one. He's all about his own self-love, his own self-care. And I feel like as a character, he's a codependent character of the other boys, of Lupin and Sirius too. Like he is not his own person whatsoever. He's just kind of just he's a shadow of them. He's just blasé.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that interpretation. I thought about the kind of the emotional, the protection of each other, specifically Harry. All of these efforts are kind of going in to protect Harry from XYZ. So that was my first inclination. Pettigrew as kind of the codependent figure in the friend group. I like thinking about that as well. It's interesting.
Alrighty. And then we'll go to the rune of the day, which is... I think we pulled this one before, Jess. It's called Wooyun. Wunyu.
Okay.
And it means joy, pleasure, and hope. So...
A lot of that.
I can go with hope with this one because Sirius gave Harry a lot of hope walking back. I can take you away from this. I can give you home where you're accepted. I can see this rune really applying to that scene.
Yeah.
Well, even when the Dementors are attacking and surrounding him, the happy thought that Harry is trying to hold on to is the fact that I get away from the Dursleys. I can go live with Sirius. Like, he's going to be fine. I'm going to go live with Sirius. So, I mean, that's definitely hope right there.
Yeah, because a more detailed situations that have been difficult are resolved and optimism is renewed. And maybe that a surprise development comes into your life that changes everything for the better. Which, again, quintessentially what, you know, thinking that Harry gets his whole Dursley problem solved in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't, I mean, y'all nailed it with that, without even hearing the full explanation. That's awesome.
Alrighty. Any thoughts, Jess?
I was thinking about, and I mean, I think it kind of builds off what you all were talking about, the fact that he actually was able to create his Patronus because of all of these things coming to fruition. And that, I don't know, some of the things initially that he was thinking of when he was trying to develop it were a little surface level, but I think that that just kind of shows you the kind of hurt and pain and suffering that he has been through living in a family that thinks he's absolute garbage, and kind of having the hope of, like, not only do I get to live with somebody that understands my plight, knew my father, all these things, you know, but is also kind of not going to shun my magic, but instead embrace this very special, interesting part of me. So it was obviously a pretty powerful moment for him. Not just like, oh, cool, I don't have to live with these idiot people, but it was a little deeper than that for Harry, I think.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yay. So we were able to glean a lot from an otherwise, because I pulled this rune and I was just like, oh, crap. Alrighty then, and now we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time. So, again, Mo and Abby, the way this works is, again, we just speculate amongst ourselves, what if something specifically within the two chapters happened differently? So, would you like to share your scenarios with us?
I like to think about what if Lupin had taken the potion, like, if he was, like, drinking the potion as he was watching the map, and so he actually got that. So he still would have transformed, but he would have had his mind.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter probably wouldn't have gotten away, and they all probably would have gotten back to the castle just fine, and there wouldn't have been all the Dementor attack and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it just plies into the thing of, you know, the Dementor's coming. Again, one thing I've been thinking about a lot, because I'm a linguistics nerd, is how the communication with the Dementors works. Like, do they have a language or whatever? Because it's, of course, you know, it makes for dramatic writing, you know, to have them appear and just be like, oh crap, a werewolf wasn't bad enough. But in the sense that, again, they're not supposed to be anywhere on the grounds, and yet now they're swarming. So that's either, there's one of two possibilities of that Snape in some fashion, without the use of language or whatever, we don't know how that works, summoned them and they were already answering a call of a staff member, or that they're just totally out of control and just like could, like, be like sharks smelling blood and just went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it's the sense of if Lupin was able to keep his, like, could Lupin produce a Patronus as a werewolf?
Man.
That's a deep question.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. I'm trying to think. Yeah.
Like, because, like, this isn't a big spoiler, Jess, but, you know, nonverbal magic is possible. But, again, I don't know the full dynamics of, you know, lycanthropy and whether Lupin, even retaining his mind, would be in a position to summon magic in that way. Like, because I don't know if it completely renders him incapable of wand magic, or because of the power of the full moon, he's going to be a badass, or, you know. So, yeah, so I go for the approach that even if Lupin retained his mind, there would still be a huge problem of so many Dementors, and it might have still, because of that, of Lupin being distracted by whether just, you know, protecting everyone with a Patronus or from his sheer werewolf, you know, form, Peter still would have gotten away.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
What about you, Mo?
I went a totally different direction. So I was imagining, what if Peter truly was the true hero? What if he didn't betray James and Sirius really was the villain who was coming back, who was in league with Snape, who they're, you know, both Death Eaters, and they're coming back to finally finish the deed, and Peter has been in hiding this whole time because he's been lying in wait, because he's been hunted by other past Death Eaters, like, I don't know, just throw out some names. And so he has to stay in hiding. He can't be revealed because he was a Benedict Arnold. He truly was a turncoat. And how that would play out instead, and we come through, you know, and they's like, Peter's alive. Great, join us. And he's like, oh, no, no, I'm actually here to protect Harry. And then he actually gets to play out being the true hero.
Mm. That's interesting.
It's very implausible with his personality, but it was also
I know.
But it's also like one of those big, you know, what if they were right about Sirius and he actually was in league with Lord Voldemort and not Peter?
And it's not unprecedented in literature for the guardian animal to end up being, you know, a person, a magician, or whatever, that I've been keeping an eye on you this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I would be very in line with Children's Lit, which is what this is as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I went with my, what if this came out differently? And then it would have just totally skewed the rest of the story at that point.
Yeah. Poor Harry. He would have gone back and lived with the Dursleys. That's a drag. Like, yep. That's the first thing I thought about.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jess?
So I went the route that I thought the book was going to go. That, like, what if Scabbers was just a rat? Like, what if they're like, oh, man, it's Peter Pettigrew. Oh, no, it's not. Like, I just think that would have... But, you know, trying to think through this, like, but, it, I mean, Peter Pettigrew was still a thing. He was still a rat that had the whole situation the same, but they just got, like, the wrong rat. Mm-hmm. I just was, like, imagining this whole... Because that's the scene that I was playing out. Like, as I'm reading this or I was listening to it, I was thinking, this is going to be such a letdown. They're all going to be like, and, oh, what happened? So it's not that fun, and it's kind of depressing to think about. I think about some stories and shows and movies and whatever where it takes that route where it's just like you, that feeling that you just got let down. So what if we got let down? What if it was just a rat?
Yeah. I am all for Sirius going on a rat hunt. Like, his quest is to find the rat that is Peter Pettigrew.
Would that have made his story less believable? Because I would also think, like, he's like, no, seriously. Oh, sorry. This guy's a rat. I was gesturing. This guy's a rat. And so, because, you know, everybody has it out, you know, and has it out for him and thinks he's guilty of this. And then Scabbers, i.e. Peter Pettigrew, kind of makes his case for him. Like, what if he's still right, but he just wasn't there?
Yeah, I think of Abby's this week on Keeping Up with Sirius Black.
And the rat he found this week. Actually, I'm thinking Sirius Black in the event. Sirius Black and Crookshanks the Adventures. Like, can you imagine, like, this black dog and this orange fluffy cat just going on great adventures to find this rat?
Yes. Like, Homeward Bound, but, like, I don't remember who else was involved in Homeward Bound. And maybe that reference is a little too old. I'm sorry, everybody.
It's not. You're okay.
Okay.
You're fine.
I tended to think in the sense of, what if Sirius was right that he wasn't the secret keeper, but James and Lily didn't tell him who it was, and it wasn't Peter. So what if it was Sirius being innocent, Peter Pettigrew even being innocent, and someone else is
Sirius is the secret keeper. Da da da. Snape. Servius. There we go. I went the wrong way. I'm like, what's his name? It was with an S. There's too many S names in this.
Yeah, there are a lot of S names.
And then Snape was like, no, I was a secret keeper and I was tortured. And that's why I had to protect you, Harry.
That is certainly a way to go.
That gives way too much credit to Snape, though.
Yeah, I don't like that. That's the only part about it that I don't like.
What about yours? Or did you have one, Amy?
Mine was taken by Abby. Like, what if Remus had drank his potion?
Oh,
great lines.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, a pretty solid one. So, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Pubs. Thank you so much for joining us, Mo and Abby. It was a true delight.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, it was great. Quite enjoyed the rune in Toro. Interpretation with the chapters. I'm like, this is a different way to think about it. I'm like, cool.
Yeah. Just trying desperately, you know, with all them, you know, I don't tend to think of it as rivalry. There's enough Harry Potter podcasts to go around and most Potterheads will happily digest multiple, but I'm just like, I just want an exercise that's slightly different.
That's good.
Yeah. So again, everyone, make sure to check out Mo and Abby on their fabulous podcast, The Book Life, and then tune in next week where Jess and I will go over the culmination of Prisoner of Azkaban with chapters 21 and 22, Hermione's Secret, and Owl Post Again. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.